to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, ZIP 6. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Stank Dog with you once again on Binary Revolution Radio. And I am here with a mystery guest. So, mystery guest, would you sign in, please?
Hey, how you doing?
No, I need more than that. Nobody's going to guess off of just that.
Hi-ho, well, let's see. Yes, I am a criminal. My crime is that of curiosity. My crime is that of judging people by what they say and think, not by what they look like. Mm-hmm. Yep. My crime is of outsmarting you, something that you'll never forgive me for. I am a hacker, and this is my manifesto. You may stop this individual, but you can't stop us all. After all, we're all alike.
You know, that sounds vaguely familiar. Is Kermit the Frog, is that my special guest host today?
Celebrity Frog impersonated.
Celebrity Frog impersonated very well by a voice that the old school listeners of RFA, and actually you've been on a recent episode of RFA, would recognize, the one, the only, Rax.
How's it going, man?
Welcome to the show, and thank you for being on the show.
Hey, sure enough.
I'm going to jump right in because I know you and I can talk for probably 5-6 hours straight without taking a breath. Figure we jump right into the housekeeping segment of the show, which, as you know, is where we answer email, take care of the little things like that. And the first thing I want to address, if you'll indulge me, is that this will be streaming on Veterans Day. So I wanted to shout out a happy Veterans Day to everyone and thank all the veterans that may be listening, if any. And jump into email feedback from last week. Now, I had an email from Shatter. Last week I talked about the different hacker conventions out there and some of what little bit I did know about them. Now, and granted, I admittedly know very little about them. And I had heard the reputation that DEF CON has, kind of the party atmosphere going on. And I got an email from Shatter who says that, yeah, they party. They party at night, but they learn at day. And, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm looking very much forward to going to DEF CON. So if anybody got the wrong impression, like I was putting it down as nothing but a big party, that's not what I meant at all. But I guess I'll judge for myself when I go up there this upcoming 2004, hopefully. Knock on wood.
Yeah, I ended up, I volunteered and worked at H2K2, so I worked my ass off and didn't get a chance to hang around and do too much else. But it seemed there was like a little bit less of that, and I think part of the thing, I mean, it's Las Vegas, Sin City, you know, the whole thing like that, so...
Yeah, I'm sure that helps, you're right. I didn't think about that, but...
Turning the swimming pool purple with dye and shit like that, you know, people really get into that.
Well, isn't, but I mean, H2K2, H2K4 upcoming, whatever they announce it, is in the middle of New York City, if I'm correct, right? So
downtown Manhattan, right across from Madison Square Garden.
Well, isn't that like an all-night party? I mean, it may not be called Sin City, but, I mean, isn't that pretty much an action-packed place, too?
Well, again, I didn't get much chance to go out and check stuff out. I worked my butt off, so.
Well, I assume, then, from those statements, you're planning on going to the upcoming H2K4, whatever it's called?
I had a name for it. I emailed Emmanuel. I said, call it Hope for Planet Earth, right? Because Hope being the recursive acronym for Hackers on Planet Earth. And, you know, let's hope it's the fourth conference, and you're, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so I thought it was kind of clever.
Right. F-O-U-R, F-O-R. Okay, I gotcha. Did he acknowledge or anything?
No, he's one of those guys you got to keep emailing, like, over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
I kind of get that impression about him, yeah. Well, maybe we... I wish they would hurry up and name it something. I don't want to call it H2K4 if it's not what it's going to be.
Yeah, just call it the Hope Conference. I mean, that's technically... basically what it is.
Yeah, and that's what I've been saying on the air. Regardless, I'm going to be trying my best to go. And I am going to also try to go to DEF CON. And frankly, I want to go to as many as I can this upcoming year. I'd like to compare and contrast all of them. See what I like about some, what I don't like about others. And there seems to be a lot more of them lately. A lot of them coming out of the woodwork, so to speak. And a lot of them that are billing themselves as security conferences as opposed to hacker conferences, but they still seem very hacker-oriented. And on the opposite side of the coin, there's some that are billed as hacker conferences, but they seem to be aiming and sending ads. I don't remember which one I got an ad for at my job where I get solicited for, you know, business stuff, and it was touted, however, as a hacker's conference.
Well, you know, that's the thing, and they actually made up a T-shirt at DEF CON. It says, "I'm not a hacker, I'm a, quote, security professional."
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing, and the whole thing of it is that it's a tool, just like anything else, and it's how you decide to apply it. So probably saw it more at DEF CON than at H2K2. But I mean, you've got the penny loafer, khaki pants and polo shirt wearing NSA guys, sitting next to some pasty faced kid with a green mohawk. So that's the kind of thing. And literally, I mean, that's why they do the spot the Fed and everything. So they have people from the French Foreign Legion and the Israeli intelligence are all going there, and they're just mixing in with everybody else and just learning all about the same stuff at the same time.
Well, except everybody's pointing at him playing spot the Fed.
Yeah, well, that's half the fun of it.
All right, I have another email here, and I bet you this is something you're gonna go off about. We'll see. I got an anonymous email. Well, someone who I didn't want to give out their name, because they're in the gaming industry, and I don't want to give out a name. Talking about Half-Life 2, I mentioned also on the last show, and it's been quite a bit in the news about Half-Life 2 source code being stolen. Now, we mentioned on the show, I don't know exactly, but I mean, I basically said that I am opposed. I mean, it's a bad thing. However, I chastised Valve for being broken into that easily, for being vulnerable that people got in and got it. Well, this person explains to me, and I did go out and do some research after this, because no offense if you're listening to this person, but I got to verify that the information I'm getting from sources is true. So I went out and looked, and sure enough, what he says and what I confirmed is that this was not a simple script kiddie thing. To use this person's word, it was not a script kiddie issue. It was not an easy oversight of some sort. Apparently, they were actually under 3 weeks of attacks and attempted infiltration of people. So they were trying really hard to get in here. I heard the word organized used a few times. I don't know if I would go that far, at least not without more information and seeing some of the details. But it definitely looks like somebody was trying really hard. It wasn't just somebody in there for the fun of it or because they found a simple oversight and grabbed it. So that part of it, I guess, was a little bit, I guess I was underselling it a little bit.
But half the time, too, or probably even more than half the time, that a lot of these security breaches are actually internal. If you think about it, you got a disgruntled employee, someone who's ticked off, and they want to get back at the company for whatever reason. So they, grab stuff and they email it out, or they stick it on a floppy disk or a thumb drive or something and then email it when they get home.
Right. Absolutely. The any security professional, anybody that comes in and does an audit, that's the first thing they're going to tell you. They're not going to tell you to look outside. They're going to tell you to look inside.
It's called an eggshell defense. It's hard on the outside and soft and gooey in the middle.
Yeah.
That's most, that's where so much of the stuff is gone. And if you're dealing with programmers, I mean, any employee you have to trust, to a certain level. But, so if someone has access to some of the source code, I mean, if they're smart, and depending on what kind of versioning system, if they have anything to check it out, check out from the source code repository, they would know who would have it at different times and what have you. But so if someone, if it was an inside job and someone was smart about what they were doing, they would, try to get someone else's password, do the old shoulder surfing or what have you, and get that password and grab someone else's stuff, something that someone else had access to, not the stuff they had access to, so they wouldn't impugn themselves.
Right. Well, and, the other thing is people, I don't know if I should go too far in here, but people have a tendency of leaving themselves logged in anyway. So if someone were to take a trip to the restroom or something like that, you don't know what someone else could be doing at your computer.
Right, so. and you have to wonder. Well, a couple of things too. And you brought up a really good point last week about the genie being.
Are you sure? I brought up a good point last week. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, well, you know, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn now and then. But once the genie gets out of the bottle, it's impossible to put it back in. So once that code is out, what are they going to do? Are they going to rewrite it? If they need the same functionality, basically, it's going to do the same type of thing. As long as it wasn't the entire source code for everything. I mean, people are going to reverse engineer and find whatever they can and patch stuff and whatever. So I don't know if they're doing this, like they say, any publicity is good publicity. So maybe they're doing this a little bit for a publicity thing or who knows, but, I don't know.
Yeah. And I also, had a little bit of a conspiracy theory is maybe they use this as an excuse to push the release date back. But the thing is, the game industry is pretty infamous about that. They don't need excuses. They just postpone games all the time anyway.
Right. Right.
But actually, this person brought up two points. They brought up a couple, but two points specifically that made me kind of step back and think about it. And I thought about them on the surface, but when you think about them a little bit more deeply, it makes you realize that it is kind of pretty bad what happened. I mean, I mentioned that I wasn't sure and I didn't know how much code was stolen because I still have not yet to see anything compiled. No one's got bootlegs of this game out there available or anything yet, so I theorized that they probably didn't get all of the code. Or how much of the code did they get? I have no idea.
Right.
Well, it doesn't really matter. One of the points he was making was that it's not really whether or not they got everything so that they can compile and have bootlegs of the game. That's not really the major... I mean, that is a major concern, don't get me wrong. But another very important concern is the fact that there's an engine being developed upon which this game is built. You know, it's not just a game, it's a game engine with a game on top of it. And when people go in and steal the source code, even parts of it, it's very valuable because they license that engine out to other game developers. You know, the Unreal Engine and the Quake Engine, those aren't the only games built on them. They license that out and they build Star Trek games on it. And they build, I can't even think of names off the top of my head. I'm not a big gamer. But they license that out and make money off of that engine. Well, now that some of the code is leaked out, these other companies have some code to build off of and learn from and reverse engineer, something that I loved. I love looking at code and decompiling, reverse engineering, seeing how it works and stuff like that. And now these people have something to build from. So they can, it's not as simple as a cut and paste, but in not so many words, they can cut and paste and reuse a lot of this code. It is suddenly... I don't know if I should say public domain, but it pretty much has become that. Once it's leaked, like you said, you can't put it back. It's out there now.
But the thing is, if Valve is developing the engine, and not a lot of companies out there can do it. It does, and a few others, do it and develop that engine. And these other gaming houses take and build on that engine, and the content is what these other gaming houses provide, like you say, the Star Trek thing or the Matrix thing or whatever, right?
Right.
So if Valve... first of all, assuming that it was the gaming engine code that was stolen and someone else gets it, no company is going to be able to put a product out based on that because Valve would very easily be able to prove that, it's using this, new engine, whatever it's called.
Right.
The Half-Life 2 engine. And if they license that out to, X, Company X and Company Y, all of a sudden Company Z comes out with a product based on that, Company Z is going to get their butt sued off.
Right, but with only bits and pieces of it, it's going to be that much harder to prove.
But
if they're only using the module for, say, the physics module for the weapons, or, I can't even think. Maybe they used just the engine or the module that powers the water effects. It's awfully hard to pinpoint specific functions that are used within a game. The whole engine itself, yeah, you could probably find a lot of similarities and enough to nail it down. But if you use just bits and pieces of it, it's going to be awfully hard to find.
I don't know if there's enough companies out there that would have the capabilities of building the engine. That's why other companies license the engine from the IDs and the Valves of the world, is because they don't have that skill base, that talent to do that. They're content people, and they make the game and do all the other stuff, build it on someone else's engine.
Right, and another factor to that, which we probably shouldn't go into too much, is what are they going to do if some country, like, for example, Serious Sam, Croatia, what are you going to do if some country, some programmers or developers in another country get a hold of this? How are you going to force U.S. copyright law and lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to even open up that can of worms, but, you know, you got to think on the global scale.
Yeah.
The second thing that they mention, and this is just kind of a pet peeve of mine, I hate people in any online games that, well, for lack of a better word, cheat. I guess there really is no better word. They cheat. And a pet
come up with a creative euphemism. I don't know if you caught RFA when I was giving Duel all kinds of hell about his euphemism, you know, trespassing. You know, it's urban exploration. It's trespassing.
Yeah. Well,
cheating is cheating.
You just call it what it is. And, you know, cheating is, like you said, it's cheating. There's no way around it. And it's a pet peeve of mine when I go on to a game like, what is it, Counter-Strike I play is pretty much the only game I really play. I hate it when I'm on Counter-Strike and somebody's cheating, but you know they don't call them a cheater. You know what they call them? They call them a hacker. No, you're not a hacker. You're a cheater. They're two totally different things. You downloaded some cheat, some tool or whatever, and you're using it to cheat at a video game. Where did hacking come into that whole thing? But anyway, that's a whole different side rant. I didn't mean to go off on that tangent. But the reason it relates to this is because the person pointed out to me that the security module for this game was one of the ones that was taken. So people can, again, look at that code, reverse engineer it, and do one of two things. They can either develop cheats because they know how it works, or B, they can create admin accounts or grant admin authorities and have ultimate power to run through the thing, or even worse than that, they may find loopholes or ways to crash the server, overload the server, whatever. So there's a lot of damage that could be done, and the security module probably, I don't know about the rest of the modules, but the security modules probably going to have to be changed.
Yeah, very likely.
But, and you know what, and I'm going to end it like this, because like you just said, a cheater is a cheater, there's no other way to call it, and stealing source code, breaking into a company and stealing it, is wrong. A thief is a thief. You know, it would be great if they released the open source and we could all take it and make our own games. And, you know, sometimes you buy a game and it sucks and you get mad and you think you could write something better. It would be great, but this company spends time developing and writing this code to make this game. And there's nothing wrong with that. There really isn't. There's nothing necessarily wrong with making money and having a company and developing software. There's nothing innately wrong with just doing that.
Right.
In my opinion, anyway.
But here's the thing, and so many people kind of justify this because it's so easy to do. You know, you need a computer. You can't, you know, clone. You can't copy someone else's computer and have that hardware. Since it's just all zeros and ones, people figure, well, it's so easy, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Especially what gets me is when companies do that, you know, they'll be using bootleg software, you know, and you'll say to them, well, look, when you need another desk, do you go out and steal a desk? Well, no, I go out and buy a desk. Well, when you need another computer, do you go out and steal a computer? No, I buy a computer. Well, so how can you go out and steal software when you need another copy of the license? You know, people just figure, again, because it's so easy to do, it's okay for some reason.
It doesn't necessarily make it right. However, to a certain extent, what I will commit to saying is that I understand it sometimes, but I don't justify it. You know, it's two different things. I understand that the RAA makes people angry and that they've been ripping consumers off. I absolutely understand why people dislike them and why people fight against them so much. I understand that, but I never, ever debate the fact that that downloading music or downloading pirated whatever is, by the letter of the law, illegal. Understandable, yet illegal. In some circumstances, anyway. And that's all I have to say about that. That was my Forrest Gump impression. That's all I can give you.
No, that's your. It's for your voices.
Yeah, I don't do a Kermit. Sorry.
But Marvin the Martian.
What would Marvin the Martian say?
Oh, drat these computers! They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them. MQ-36 exploding space modulator. That creature has stolen the space modulator.
Maybe you can make a 3D Marvin the Martian game where you can have all the big green, what are those turkey buzzard things?
Actually, Marvin wasn't a Martian. If you go back and watch that one, it was instant Martians, those vulture-looking things. Those were the Martians. Marvin was not a Martian.
So what was Marvin?
It's never defined.
Of course he was a Martian. Because they were Martians doesn't mean he wasn't necessarily... They could have been a whole different race of Martians.
Yeah, instant Martians, just add water, and that. Yeah, that's not... I'm not buying that. He was a Venusian or something, I don't know. But he was not a Martian. It's just the alliteration is what...
No, see, I'm thinking all those turkey buzzard things, they were from the other side of Mars. Marvin was over in the ghetto somewhere. He was just looking for a space modulator. Yeah, I'm just saying there were two separate parts of the hood, but I think they're all Martians.
That's a pretty, bold assumption. Just because he was black, you assume he's from a ghetto. That's really bad.
Oh, see, now you're going to put words in my mouth. I'm just saying he was from the opposite side.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
uh-huh.
I'm from the ghetto and I'm not black.
Uh-huh.
All right, see?
How do we know that? We've never seen you.
Well, actually, that's a lie. There are pictures in the Ben Rev Gallery. Pimp, pimp.
All right, speaking of blatant advertisement, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, you do what you got to do. By the way, Binary Revolution Magazine, issue 3 coming soon. Now, that's enough for whoring ourselves out. We normally this time will also talk about what we've been working on lately. And me, I've been doing nothing but coding. All day, every day. I've been coding my butt off at work, so I don't really have a lot of exciting stuff to talk about this week. I've been doing a lot of Oracle programming, and I may have found a nice little backdoor through Oracle database security, but I don't really know for sure if it's consistent or if it's going to work, so I don't want to really go into too much detail on it now.
Wait, coding Oracle, what do you have to do to stay awake for that? Do you take, like, no-dos and Red Bull or something?
Put toothpicks on my eyelids to keep them from falling.
Oh, man.
It's very, very, very dry.
Yeah.
Very dry. It's actually it's not just SQL. It's something called PLSQL, which is a customized SQL for Oracle, which means basically it has some precompiled functions and a little bit different syntax. It's not really. I mean, if you know SQL, you know PLSQL. It's not that big of a jump.
And this segment of Ben Rev Radio brought to you by Oracle and Larry or Ellison.
Man, we're not supposed to have commercials and advertising, but so far you're turning
corporate horrors. That's all.
Yeah, gosh, man, I should at least get some money for it if I'm going to pimp this stuff out.
Yeah, well,
I'm looking ahead in the notes. Who else am I about to pimp coming up? Oh man, I got another. Oh man, well maybe we won't get that far in the notes. Maybe we'll come back. I have a dilemma. Not a big dilemma, but funny little anecdote, we should say. I have been getting email in my personal email account. That would be not the StankDog account. StankDog is very rarely confused with other StankDogs. I don't think there are any.
You mean your mama didn't name you Stank for your first name?
That Stank Diggy Dog. My middle initial's Diggy, D. No, I'm getting these... The thing is, I'm getting people's personal medical records. I'm getting attached Microsoft document files. And, I mean, these things are very in-depth. I mean, obviously it has demographic stuff like name, address, phone number, social security number, but it also goes into a lot of detail about, basically it's the doctor's notes and what he did and what his treatments and their medical history and stuff like that. And I got one. And I didn't really think anything of it. I just opened a doc file, and I'm like, what is this? I deleted it. I'm like, oh, this isn't me. Somebody made a mistake. Well, I got another one. So now I'm like, how exactly do I handle this? I mean, obviously I have to contact these people and tell them to stop. It's obviously not a one-time mistake, but, I mean, that's kind of an awkward thing. What am I supposed to email them and go, hey, you're sending me your customer's private medical records?
You know what? That's actually a violation of HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability, blah, 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 whatever act, which is major, major, you know, big-time serious stuff for getting the hospital, the doctor, and everyone else involved in trouble.
Well, see, I mean, I'm sure it was innocent, but, I mean, you got to think, they're sending this to, I mean, granted, the doctor's name that they're sending it to is the same as mine.
So if your name was Joe Doe... This is Dr. Joe Doe.
Yeah, he was Stank Doggy Dog, and I'm Stank Diggy Dog. So everything was just almost identical. I mean, it really was, actually. It was his real name was very close to mine. And they obviously have put it into their database wrong, so I'm probably going to get more of these. I emailed them back and just said, you know, I think you made a mistake. I asked them to confirm with me to make sure that they've taken me off their mailing list, because I don't want to get... You know, I don't want to get in trouble for reading them or getting them. You know, I'm not intercepting, I'm not intentionally intercepting these emails, but...
Well, I would say, you know, if I were you, I would maybe, you know, do a whois lookup, find up the technical contact or call the hospital or whatever else, ask for the IT department and explain what's going on.
Yeah, you know what, that's a good idea. I can contact the technical listing on whois or on their registrar.
But I mean, that,
at least email
them. I mean, I'm assuming this is like a Hotmail or a Yahoo account or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's a webmail account. Why would they? You should never send anything that
right,
personal.
Fine, would send anything confidential. You know, and who's going to trust a doctor, you know, Dr. Joe Doe at Yahoo.com?
Exactly. Exactly. That to me, I didn't know if that was just me thinking that. I'm like, wait a minute. Why would you even send something like this? To, if it's not a you know, DrJoeDoe.com. You know, then you have a little bit more, I guess, I don't know, do you have a little bit more faith because of that? You're still sending...
Well, no, but you know what they really should do? I mean, it should be...
Yeah, I know an easy one-word answer, but you go ahead.
Well, I mean, it should be PGP'd.
Exactly.
It should at least be digitally signed.
Encrypted, that's what I was going to say.
Encrypted, you know, it should be, you know, it's something because just think how easy it would be for someone to intercept this, change the things around a little bit, and, you know, potentially, you know, damage someone's health. And someone's life because they decided to be malicious with this. It's just unfathomable that in the days of regulation with the HIPAA and everything else, that someone would just be so blatantly careless in sending this personal information out.
Yeah, and you know, not only the carelessness of what somebody might do with it, but I mean, I assume the reason they sent this is because that person's seeking medical help or attention, and the doctor they're going to needs this medical information. So somebody
right,
could
probably
be
not getting it.
Obviously not. So yeah,
that's a bad scene, man.
Yeah.
Just all in all.
Well, I emailed them and I again asked them to confirm with me, and I explained to them exactly what we said. I'm very concerned that someone might not be getting their proper medical attention. So hopefully they will straighten it out and. But you know what, just to be the extra nice guy, I am going to contact their whois information.
Or even just call them up and ask for their director of IT, you know, because the whois thing, that could have been something.
But it's probably, no, I think it's probably coming from a secretary or somebody in the office that, you know, the IT person might not even know them. It could be outsourced, it could be, you know, a whole medical complex, and this is only one office that's sending it.
But ultimately, he or she is where the buck stops, right? If it's relating to something in IT, and if they don't know, you know, they'll find out, and you know, just mention the word HIPAA, saying I'm sure this probably isn't HIPAA compliant that I'm receiving this, and you'll probably have their complete undivided attention.
Well, I guess it won't hurt to contact as many people as I can get a hold of just to make sure. Well, anyway, I've already sent one email. I'll give it overnight. I'll give it till tomorrow. Well, it's a holiday, though. I'll give it till Wednesday. And if I haven't heard anything by the end of the work day Wednesday, I will send out follow-ups to to as many people as I can find to make sure it's covered. And, you know, that's pretty much it for me. It was a pretty light week. Now, you, on the other hand... Hey, it's been a while since you've been on the radio. What do you got going on, man? What's your deal?
Well, I tend to keep busy. You know, on top of everything else, I work in, you know, in the IT business. I also teach IT courses at a local college here, generally in the evening. So I've been working on that and developing that. We're actually developing an associate's degree in information technology security. That's taken up a lot of my time, and you know, just the regular kind of life stuff.
Yeah, and boy, life takes up time. Life really takes up a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, so I've been focusing on doing security stuff lately. Went to a really interesting train the trainer session up in Chicago last week for another course in security, and learned a lot of stuff. You know, that's one of the things you can never. You can never stop learning in with computer stuff because it's, you know, the quote unquote lifelong learning. I thought when I got done with college and I was doing the computer stuff, I said, well, this will keep my interest for about 5 years because I have a short attention span. Well, fortunately, every 18 months it's changing, so you know, the computer stuff is always going to keep me interested.
Right, right, and you know, it's if you don't adopt that mindset of constantly evolving and changing and learning new things, even though you're done with college and you have your degree, I kind of kind of thought that myself, too, when I was younger, that I just want to hurry up and get that degree, and then I'll be done with school forever. Well, no, if you really think like that, then, yeah, 18 months later, the world's going to pass you by, and you're not going to be up to par, so...
Well, think of it like for doctors, too. I heard someone use this analogy, if you will, that, like, for open-heart surgery, you know, they used to have to, you know, cut the chest open, spread the ribs, you know, put the zipper in, as they call it. Now, they can do open-heart surgery through a half-an-inch incision in the chest wall. So doctors, you know, have to relearn all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, which doctor are you going to go to?
Yeah, no, not a witch doctor, but... Yeah, I mean, you know, so rather than having something invasive and all that, you know, where your whole, you know, body cavity is cracked open, you know, they're doing that. So they have to keep on top of things. Well, you as an IT person and, you know, for all the listeners out there, too, you know, as you're doing this, you know how quickly stuff changes. And, you know, pick any technology you want or any software or whatever else in that. It doesn't matter, but it's constantly changing. And you can't afford to be, you know, two versions of... You can't really afford to be any more than two versions behind on something, whether it's your word processor or your operating system or what have you, because, you know, as we know, like with internet time and everything, it can only be made sense of when you look at it in terms of dog years. But it, you know, things change so quickly. The computer industry changes more in 3 months than the rest of the world does in a year. So every year in the computer industry is kind of like 4 years in the real world that things are changing, and you can't afford to get that far behind.
No, you cannot. You absolutely cannot. Because there's somebody there waiting with the knowledge to jump right in and take your place.
Man, I can't tell you how many people I've met that said, oh, yeah, I used to be into computers 10 years ago and they got out of it. I'm trying to get back into it now and it's like it's a whole different world. It's like, duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely different.
I could tell you stories, but I won't. How about, did you go to your 2600 meeting? I had a really, really good 2600 meeting this past week.
Yeah, we had ours here. We moved it, for those folks who listen to RFA, we moved it out of the Arizona Mills Mall in the Phoenix area. There's a whole big, long thing about that. But anyway, it was time to move it. We really needed to move it out of there. Moved it up into Borders. They have a cafe at one of the Borders stores. So we moved up into there, and... You may have heard about the story. I'm sure you covered it on Ben Rev Radio here, too. But there was a company, just happened to be out of Phoenix as well, that came up with a, quote, new copy protection scheme for music CDs. If you put it in the computer, their, quote, unquote, copy protection scheme would install some other software and would do some other stuff, and you could not play this music CD on your computer. Well, all that, quote, unquote, security software is putting an autorun.inf file. You can bypass by either A, shutting it off, or hitting the shift key when you're doing that. Well, this company decided to threaten to sue the guy who figured this out. And in the true hacker ethic, right, you figure out a solution to something and you share that information.
Right.
That's the true hacker ethic. And so this guy decides to share. Well, they're threatening DMCA lawsuits against this guy. So anyway, long story made short, Dual contacted them and invited them to the meeting. And, you know, he had a good dialogue and stuff with them. And apparently they were just blowing smoke up his tailpipe because they didn't call back. So we didn't have any formal presentation. We just had general conversations, and I think a couple of the Fiend and Zapper ended up popping out their laptops and doing some kind of online gaming there. And then everyone just kind of standing around looking and seeing, looking kind of funny. And when you get non-computer people, you know, looking at, what the heck are you doing there?
Right.
So, yeah, it was pretty good. It was kind of cash this time, but... you know, I think half of it is just the social aspect of things. You know, just getting out with other people with similar kinds of outlooks and on technology and on the world, and sharing your views with them.
Right, and you know, actually, I was talking with the guy who runs. He hates to say that, the person who started my 2600 meeting, and we kind of talked about, you know, having presentations and stuff like that, and we were saying that it's, you know, it's a lot of time, obviously, to put that kind of stuff together, and we're going to try to start doing that, but at the same time, you know, it's like, it's awfully structured, it's like trying to nail down, it's trying to just get everyone to sit down and look at a presentation that, A, they may not be interested in, B, they may already know, it's, you know, it's like, oh, we came to the conclusion that it's, you know, the social aspect of it that's more important. And possibly once every 3 or 4 months we might bring a presentation or something like that. Or more often if they become popular. but it's just so much going on, and our meetings have grown to, like, I don't know how big your meetings are, but ours started off when I started going with, like, geez, even the first one I went to, nobody showed up. And I talked about that before. Not a single person showed up. Now, miscommunication, people just happen to not be able to make it, whatever. The rest of the meetings were like 3 to 5 people. And now here lately, the past 2 or 3 months, it keeps growing exponentially. There was about 15 people or thereabouts at this last meeting, up from about 11 or 12 the one before that. So they're growing. They're adding people on. So I think it's just a kind of a cool thing to hang out and talk to like-minded people, like I said. Plus, since a lot of these people are new, there's that feeling out process. I mean, you got to admit, it's kind of awkward and kind of not intimidating in an imposing kind of way, but intimidating in a weird, I don't know any of you guys kind of way for newbies or for new people to come to the meeting. I mean, not derogatory newbies, but for people to come to a meeting for the first time, you don't know anybody. It's just like any other social situation. It might be more comfortable for them to just come in, kind of hang out to the side, listen to people, maybe meet one or two people at a time and ease their way into the group instead of being told, you sit here, you sit there, we're going to give this presentation, yada, yada, yada. So it's kind of, I don't know, we're kind of choosing the direction, I guess, right now. And regardless, I'm very happy with the way it's been going and growing. And do you guys have regular presentations or...
Well, we actually want to get to that. We've been talking about that for a while. So I did the presentation last month. I did a thing on tunneling VNC through SSH to have a secure remote connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that went over well, and I actually did that for the local ISSA security meeting as well. So actually one of the guys there, a younger guy, his dad or something came, so he was kind of hanging out to the side. But when the presentation started, he was interested as well. And he was in the ISSA, and he asked me to... if I'd like to do the presentation there, but I don't know. It's the other side of things. If someone new is coming there, and you know, if you don't know anybody and just kind of hanging and trying to talk, maybe a little difficult. You know, not knowing how to break the ice or whatever. I always try to go up to everyone and say, hey, you know, hi, I'm Rax.
And, yeah, and I do the same.
You know, just to kind of break the ice, because that is awkward. And, you know, that's just human nature to kind of be in little groups, little cliques, and it's kind of hard breaking into that. So,
exactly.
You know, if you're out there, if you're listening, if you haven't gone to a meeting because you don't know anyone, you know, give it a try. There are some good groups out there. There are some bad groups out there. You know, there's some groups that, you know, they'll just completely, you know, shun you and not want you to be there because they don't know who you are. And there's some groups that will welcome you with open arms and, you know, invite you to, you know, just kind of sit back and enjoy and, stuff like that. So if you haven't gone there just because you figure, well, I don't know anyone, at least give it a try. Go out,
exactly.
And give it a try.
Go with friends that you do know as a
yeah.
couple of, you know, 2 or 3 guys interested and go check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there's more of the latter. I think there's more of people that will accommodate you and let you in than not.
Yep.
I really do. And, you know, something else you mentioned that I like to do and like to I like hearing this story from you was the fact that someone was there with their father. So that's very, very cool to me. I have invited a couple people, like someone was listening to Ben Rev Radio, and I was chatting with him on IRC, and he noticed that I was in Florida. So I mentioned to him about the meeting. He said he'd never been to one before and was a little apprehensive, and I told him, I said, come on, I'll be there. You know, I'll meet you there. I'll ask you, you know, whatever. And, you know, you meet them, you let them get comfortable. At least they know one person. And you have to start somewhere. You start with one person. And there have been other people who said that they didn't know how they were going to get there, or they didn't know if their parents, you know, were going to drive them to a meeting. Because you've got to remember, some of these people are not old enough to drive, or you can't afford a car, don't have an automobile, don't have access, whatever. So there was also someone one time who came, and, you know, I spoke to the gentleman's, the young man's mother, and explained to her, you know, and told her my real name. I'm not, you know, if you're worried about, you don't know any of us people, you know, I kind of met her, and I thought that was a very cool thing. So I try to be as open as we can, and if more people did that at their meetings, you know, I think a lot more people would become involved.
No, and that's part of the thing, too, for the meetings is that, you know, it meets in public and everyone's welcome and all that kind of stuff because, you know, whether law enforcement people, they're welcome just as well. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not about doing illegal, illicit stuff. It's about sharing the information and, you know, sharing opinions and things like that. You can agree to disagree if you don't like something about that, but, you know, with people in any kind of situation. But yeah, it's just all open and out front, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? You'll meet some of the most open-minded people you've ever met in your life. So very seldom do you have those kind of arguments and you know, closed-mindedness. And at our meeting this past, this is a good segue. Watch how I set this up. Say this is learning professionalism from Rax the Master. Watch this segue. After my 2600 meeting, several of the members gathered to go watch Matrix Revolutions.
I was going to say at ours, one of the big topics of discussion was Matrix Revolutions.
See, we're on the same page. Now, we talked about this before the show, of course, but we didn't go into details because we're going to talk about this on the show. About the movie. Now, I went to see it this weekend, and you say you saw it...
I saw it opening night.
Yeah, you probably saw it a lot earlier than I did. Actually, I had my second cyber law exam on opening night. So, yes, most of my friends, they went to see it without me. Thank you. I do not shout out any of you. They went to see it without me while I'm taking a three-hour exam. And I don't know how it went yet, so... I went to see it this weekend with some other friends who also didn't go see it for one reason or another. And I don't know, should I start? What did you, I'll start with you. What did you think of the movie?
I liked it. I liked it. The guys I went to see it with were complaining about it. They're saying, oh, there was too many religious overtones. Oh, it ripped off too many movies. Everyone admitted, yeah, the special effects were great, but I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Let's break it apart. Let's do an actual critical review, point by point, because I couldn't help but looking online before I went to see it. I didn't want to read anything. I didn't want to ruin it, but I couldn't help notice that there were a lot of people giving it bad reviews. Well, people gave the second movie bad reviews as well, and I thought it was fantastic. I thought Reloaded was great. And I agree with you. I think Revolutions was also a darn good movie.
Here's the thing about that, that's my opinion of it, is that, first of all, when The Matrix came out in 99 or whatever, it was so groundbreaking, it was so different, people did not have a frame of reference for it. So they were just blown away because it was so different, which is a good thing, right?
Right,
so,
of
now,
course.
People had expectations for the second movie, and they knew what the characters were, and they... said, well, this should be this way, this should be that way. And when it didn't quite fit, people weren't happy about it. Well, now with the third movie, when we've known so much more about the characters, about the environment, about everything else, there's tons of things online. They will give you some URLs to pop up in the show notes as well, but there's tons of stuff online, about all these various theories that people had about things, like it was going to be a Matrix in the Matrix.
Oh, yeah. Well, on the forums, on the BenRev forums, you can go back and search. And we, myself included, I was very much into them. And I'm like, any movie that makes you think about it and talk about it with others, and maybe it's this, and how cool would it be if it was that? When's the last time any movie did that? And how can you say it's bad when it does prompt you to do stuff like that?
Anything that simulates the gray matter can't be that bad.
I mean, normally, if you leave a good movie... you walk out going, wow, that was so cool. This person kicked butt, or that person was just, oh, the special effects were great, and the acting was just super duper. I'm trying to use controlled language, you notice
that? Yeah, very good.
And, you know, you walk out of there, and you're like, when you drive home, you go to bed, that's it. You know, the most you'll ever talk about that movie again is, oh, yeah, I saw that. It was really good. But with The Matrix, you find yourself talking, well, wait a minute, but what did he mean when they said that? And, oh, did you notice that was snuck in there? And, oh, did you see that Trinity used Nmap and the SSH connected? You know, all these things that are just amazing. They're still finding stuff. What was the one I read recently about the license plate? The license plate was Isaiah something on one of the cars in Reloaded. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I didn't hear about that one.
I will... doggone it, I wish I could remember it right now. I think I posted it in the forums, but I will put it in the show notes after the fact. There was a license plate, and it was about the architect. There was a license plate that said IS, like, and then a verse from the Bible. And if you go look that verse up, it was something about, I am the architect, I have created all which you can see, or something like that, which was on the... I think it was on the license plate of a car that had Smith in it or something. And it made you think again, well, wait a minute, is there a relationship here and there? And, you know, all these little things, and these are still coming out. People are finding, after they go to DVD, they're still finding little tidbits like this.
I think the, you know, just the nature of DVD more so than even the, you know, videotape allows you to do that and stuff. Matter of fact, Meme talked about something on the bench that I guess Neo and the Oracle sat at. There was a little plaque on there, and she stopped it and did a freeze frame. She didn't want to spoil what it was, but she said there was something really there that was really insightful or whatever else. It was just like this little park bench that had this little plaque on it. And when I'm watching, I got reloaded the DVD for Reloaded, you know, a few days before the movie. So actually, I didn't watch Reloaded again. I watched all the making of and all that other stuff. And you could see someone sitting there as they're talking about making the movie. They're sitting on this park bench, and there's this little brass plate about stuff. But so, yeah, there are multiple levels of meanings, and that's specifically what they went for.
Right, and you know, another good plug-in, or whatever you want to call it, was the Animatrix. You have all these extra stories that also tie into the movie, and I did the same thing on the Animatrix. I freeze-framed in a couple spots, and you could see the names of the ships in the background and the date that it was launched, and they were accurate. You know, accurate to the storyline, that is to say.
Right.
You know, it was put into commission 50 years before the movie took place, and, I mean, everything was... I mean, they thought out every little detail, and that's, first of all, for the whole trilogy and the whole series, there was a lot of thought put into it. Now, I mentioned earlier about the Isaiah and the Bible verse, which, again, I'll look that up for the show notes, but you mentioned earlier that people were complaining about the religious undertones and the allusions to religious topics and themes, obviously with Neo. Do you think that there was, did it cross a line? Do you think there was too much?
Well, there was definitely some symbolism in there, and I'm sure it was deliberately done. And obviously for the listeners, we're trying not to, you know, disclose any of the specifics about things, just talk about things in generalities. But I read an article on...
I'm sorry, actually, let me interrupt you. Actually, you're right, we should have actually prefaced this, and I may go back afterwards and edit in the beginning... put a disclaimer that if anybody who hasn't seen the movie, I don't want to give too much away. So far, we've been pretty general, but we may go into some detail upcoming. So if you have not seen it, this might be a good point to stop listening and listen after you've seen the movie.
Right, absolutely.
So I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just thought we ought to throw that out there, though.
Right, right. But anyway, there was a website that was talking about that. I mean, lots of websites were talking about this. This was a Buddhist website called Killing the Buddha, kbd.com or .org or something. But anyway, so the thing is, depending on who you are, and deliberately the Wachowski brothers decided to do this, that you can look at it from different perspectives. So some of the obvious things is, you know, that in Christian... in Christianity, right? So Neo is the Messiah. That's a very obvious thing. Matter of fact, someone even noticed if you rearrange the letters in Neo, it spells one. So he's the one. And even like the door, in the first movie, the door that you know, his apartment was like 101 or something like this. So all those other layers of things. But then someone else brought up the fact that, you know, it's very much like the Jewish hero myth. And then someone brought up the fact, well, there's a lot of Buddhist overtones in these things. And so, and again, that was, I'm sure, deliberately done because they want to, as Stank said, you know, there's so many layers of things. When you go back and look at this thing over and over, you start to see all these various parts and pieces. Now, in the third movie, Revelations or Resolutions or whatever you want to call it, there's just booths out there already. But, for example, in one part, and this really isn't too much of a spoiler, but as Neo is doing his stuff there, and he's kind of like outstretched, so his arms, so it's kind of like Jesus on the cross type of thing, you know. So that was a very obvious one, but you know, I don't think that there was too much of that, at least in my opinion.
Well, you know, it's funny. I am a Christian. I'm not afraid to say that, but I didn't pick up on any of that, and I thought that was very odd. I didn't pick up on any of it until after, like at the very end. At the very end, I kind of got a little bit of a feeling of it. But it wasn't until afterwards reading some of people's comments and I'm like, oh, yeah, good point. Oh, I see that now after the fact. So I don't... To me, it didn't come across as very obvious, which obviously some people disagree. They thought it was very forced and it was, you know... I don't know if it was negative or... The people seem to portray it as though it was a complete... I don't know if you can say a rip-off of the Bible, but a rip-off of the whole, the one, the story of the one, the Messiah, exactly. I didn't get it as being that obvious, but maybe I was just more open-minded and willing to accept things for what I see. I go with what I see and hear, and I was willing to accept the simple fact that, yes, I know Neos is the one. I know that. I also found even these weird little things, like the first human city was 01. Or, excuse me, the first robot city was called 01,
right.
Which, ironically, you know, binary, that's kind of a really good fit. And then the human city was Zion, which is like, I don't know, maybe the little elite speak coming out of me where the 1 and the 0, the I and the O, the fact that it began with the letter Z, the complete opposite of 01, I mean, little things like that. All this stuff I noticed afterwards, while I was watching it, I was able to just suspend myself from being analytical and looking for things to dislike and looking for parallels. I was enjoying myself watching the movie. First of all, I should also say, I am definitely not the person to go to the movie theater with. My friends will tell you that I'm the worst. I will yell at the movie. I get excited. I get into the movie. And I found myself in Revolutions. Now, you messed me up when you said that now. In Revolutions, I found myself several times jumping up and saying, "You go, Neo!" You know, I was into the movie. Very few movies pulled me in as far as this trilogy of movies did.
You know, the other thing that people were criticizing was just broad generalities. And I only saw the one, and the one point that they were mentioning, but was the fact that this Matrix 3 ripped off all these other sci-fi idioms. They did all these little things. There was one scene in Matrix 3 that was that harkened very much back to Matrix 1. Again, we're trying not to spoil the thing for you, but
well, they should have stopped listening at this point. Don't hold back. Go ahead and make the point.
So we've got in Matrix 1, you know, the famous lobby scene, right, where they're running through and running off the walls and hiding behind the pillars and all that.
Right.
So there is a scene in Matrix 3 that has very much like that, when they come out of the elevators and the bad guys are there and they're shooting and they're going behind the pillars and stuff. Now, though, of course, everyone's not only running off the walls, they're completely upside down with their feet on the ceiling and stuff. So,
And
if it's borrowing from yourself, I don't consider that a ripoff. I mean, you came up with that, right? Okay, it's fair game. You can use that again if you want to.
Yeah, and you know, first of all, it's very dramatic to open an elevator door, and it's a very dramatic entrance. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with using camera angles and scenes to develop, especially when you came up with it. But also, I did notice that one. When I was watching, I'm like, okay, this was a lot like the other one, but much, much cooler. So I thought it was much better this time. And, again, that it was... I mean, that's like saying, oh, well, every boxing movie has always ripped off of Rocky or whatever, you know, whoever the first boxing movie, because, you know, everything is the same as that one. I mean, it's really, I mean, what do you expect? There's nothing wrong with having action scenes. It's a little bit different each time. You can't come up with, there's a lot of other original fighting scenes, there's a lot of other, like, here's another one I hear criticized, the very end, and this is giving something away, so definitely stop listening if you haven't seen this. The very end fight between Smith and Neo. The one that starts off on the street with all the Smiths lined up on the side.
Right.
Turns into this giant one-on-one, mano-a-mano finale to the movie that just took my breath away. I was amazed. I thought it was the most fantastic thing. And then I see people online saying they ripped it off of Dragon Ball Z, which apparently is some anime. I know it's an anime, but I've never watched it. You know, it's on like Saturday, like every day after school or something, so it can't be, you know, I won't even go there. But I don't see how you're ripping off a cartoon. The way I see it, it took three movies to build up. Like, back to the fight scene from the elevator. The first movie, you had to open your mind, and they had to slowly open your mind as a viewer to say, oh my gosh, they can do those kind of jumps? They can climb the wall like that and shoot and spin and flip? Wow, that's really cool, you know? I understand the Matrix gives them extra freedom. It took till the second and even the third movie before you realized they are improving with age, they are improving as the movie goes on, they are learning and mastering the art of the Matrix themselves. They are learning how to move and control the Matrix which is the whole premise to the whole thing. So by the time the third movie got there, I expected them to take it to the next level. If they would have put that final scene in the first or second movie, it wouldn't have been believable. It doesn't have to be realistic, but it has to be believable.
Well, plus, you know, they didn't have the state-of-the-art of technology in 99. We were talking about how quickly technology moves, right? Between, you know, the whole CGI stuff and everything else, what they're able to do now versus what they were able to do 99, 4 years ago, you know, it's just a quantum leap ahead.
Yeah, it's... I really think that this is the greatest trilogy of movies since Star Wars.
Well, since Lord of the Rings.
Darn, you got me on that one. Lord of the Rings is phenomenal.
Right, yeah, that's like the greatest piece of literature, English literature, in the 20th century. So, I mean, you got to give it its due. But.
You know, here's a little tidbit of trivia that no one cares about Stank. I actually took the Fantastic in Literature as a course at a university where I got credit to read Lord of the Rings. I got credit to read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And it was taught by, I can't give out too much information. It was taught by a very famous fantasy author. See, if I give out too much, that was like a bad, I shouldn't have even brought that up. Because if I give out too much away, that'll tie it down to me pretty closely. But I actually got college credit to read those books. And I had, of course, read them before that anyway, so. Great piece of literature. And what do you think of, we probably didn't mean to go into this tangent, but what do you think about those movies?
Oh, they're just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Phenomenal. It doesn't bother you that the whole Liv Tyler, the adaptation, and giving her more screen time, and...
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. Now, mind you, I'm not a Tolkien purist or anything. Like, I'm sure some of the people are really ticked off by anything of that nature, but...
Right. That's the same people that said Wolverine wasn't wearing his tights and his claws don't come out the middle of his fingers, they come out the top of his hand.
There
just shut up and watch the movie.
Yeah, I gotta go back to something you mentioned earlier about the Animatrix.
By all means.
And there was really, they really called like the Animatrix in this second DVD for Reloaded. You know, they said that Animatrix was really like the Matrix 1.5. But between that, to really get the full experience of it now, because there was so much of a time lag between, you know, 99 when the first Matrix came out, between Matrix 2 and Matrix 3, right? Matrix 2 was like in May, Matrix 3 is now in November.
Right.
So for Matrix 2 coming out, you know, I watched the first Matrix again. I went out and I got the Animatrix as soon as I could. I also went out and I bought the game, the Matrix game.
Mm-hmm.
And I played that it took the day off. I played that the whole day. Before going to see the movie that night, and there was a bunch of us from the 2600 meeting all went out together and saw that. But so I was really, you know, I was really kind of focused back into it the whole time.
Now, is there stuff in it? I heard that the game actually has some expanding on the story or some relationship.
There is about an hour and a half of extra live footage, or an hour of extra live footage in the game. Plus, it's going on in parallel with the second Matrix movie. And the game ends with the logos being stuck down in the tunnels, which is where the Matrix 3 picks up. So really, to get the full experience of it, you've got to watch the Animatrix, Reloaded, and then do the game as well. And they actually used, they even had a, on this DVD, which obviously I'm highly recommending, it's about the making of the game, and they had this, the Wachowskis wrote it. They had the same people doing the music, the animation. They had the actors down there, of course, doing the voice work. But they had all the little dots on them, you know, so they could do motion capture and everything.
Right.
It was really completely an integral part of the story. So if you want to really see and get the full experience, get the Animatrix, get the game, and do Reloaded.
Yeah, and, you know, this was the first time in my life, my lifetime, and I historically we didn't have the technology and everything. For example, what I'm trying to say is Lord of the Rings, let's go back to that. Great, great movies. The Matrix it's not just the movies. I can't quite even think of the words. I can't even think of vocabulary to explain. It is immersive. It's the most immersive experience. It's not just about seeing the movies. The video game brings you in. The website brings you in. They had the greatest Hack the Matrix thing going on the website. I don't know if you followed that at all, where you could go on and play with some of the interfaces and come up with hidden things and tricks. And and you could hack the site. It was designed and written to be hacked. And that was really fun. You got, like I said, the video game. You've got the animatrix that pulls you in. It's the most immersive use of... I just don't even know how to put it in words. I've never felt more immersed in a world or an environment before. You go to a movie, you watch it, you leave, you're happy, you're not happy, you're disappointed. But I felt like I was a part of this. I felt like I knew what was going on. All these little side stories. I mean, there was so much to get involved with that I just can't see. I really can't think of anything bad to say about the whole trilogy. There are, I mean, if I want to be really critical, yes, there are some scenes in certain movies and a couple little flaws or holes that I found, but I could suspend that disbelief for the sake of the movie and for what it was. And I didn't, you know, I don't want to nitpick little things here and there. So I think all in all, it was, again, one of the greatest trilogies, series of all time.
Yep, and again, it's actually had an impact on culture, and any time a movie or something can do that, that's a hallmark of a great piece of work.
Yeah, I mean, am I getting it? I know I'm struggling for words, but do you understand what I'm saying? I mean, that it pulls you in.
Well, like you said,
you spent the whole day playing that game because you were immersed in that game. It drew you. It made you want to play and learn more.
Right. Oh, by the way, too, the game, you can play it as two of the different characters, either as Niobe or Ghost, and you can play through the whole game, and you actually do different things if you're different characters, which is kind of a neat aspect too. Mm. But I think part of, you know, what makes the Matrix that immersive environment, as you're saying, as opposed to a Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is a fantasy escape. You know, there's dragons, there's evil things, and, you know, monsters and all that other stuff. Well, the Matrix is so close to reality. So close to our quote-unquote reality, right? And it's even set right about approximately the same time frame. So with the computers, with everything else, and you can get, you know, if you stretch your mind not that far, you can see, you can almost see how that, yeah, that could really be almost real.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not set, you know, in the land of Middle Earth and, you know, sometime in the, you know, undetermined past and so on and so forth. That's set right now in our modern times with things we can see.
Yeah.
And the other thing I think that you know, teenagers and younger people may seem to do with that and really get into it is because they're disenfranchised, and here's some psychology coming out, right? But anyway, it's because they're disenfranchised now with the world, and you know they feel like they're an outsider and all that other stuff. That I think people really identify with that.
Yeah, sometimes you feel like you're in the Matrix.
Absolutely.
You know. So it's escapism, which is what movies should be. It's what movies are for, to escape reality, even if it's only for a few hours.
Yep. Well, and you know, the last, first of all, they left enough of an opening that potentially there could be a fourth movie, or maybe they'll just do it as an anime thing or whatever.
Well,
let's
talk about that. The one thing that would have made me mad is if they would have ended the trilogy without closure. I felt like I got the closure that I wanted. Did you feel like they left were there any unanswered questions that were critical or that made you feel, you know, leaving unfulfilled?
What happened to Neo? He's taken away by the machines. Well, the machines know enough about human beings, and if you've seen the Animatrix, you'll know that the machines understand the physiology of humans. The machines had to understand humans well enough to hook them up to be the batteries, right? So... yeah, Neo's blinded and he's, you know, exhausted and whatever else. And if the machines take him away, are they going to rebuild him? Are they going to make him better, stronger, faster?
Are they going to stick him back in a pod to power their...
yeah, I mean, you know, so what's going to... So that was very open-ended.
But see, I took it for the simple fact of I'm going to assume for the sake of this trilogy and this story that he died at the end, which again goes to the whole Messiah thing, the whole... maybe that's the next thing, the born again, the coming back from the dead.
Right.
We won't even go there. I'm going to assume for the sake of this short, enclosed part of the whole story that he died, that he allowed the machines to pass through with him to kill Smith, in turn, killing him at the same time they killed each other because the whole issue of balance, the architect and the oracle, the whole thing of how it's balances. One is the yin, one is the yang, they're both... the only way that it could be healed and stop everything was for them to kill each other. I took it like that, and I was happy with that. Now, yes, obviously, absolutely, it's wide open that they could say, ah, ha, ha, you only thought he was dead. You know, it's very open that they could. But for right now, for closure of this story, I was content with that. I was still a little... I guess I still am a little confused onto the ending as to exactly if I'm reading too much or not enough into it. Like, I kind of almost wish the story would have ended with Neo face down in the water. I'm kind of thinking if the movie would have ended there, I would have also been happy, maybe even more so. I think coming back as the Oracle, I think that was a little bit more, made me scratch my head going, what?
Well, you saw the Oracle was assimilated by Smith, so that was the one that just happened to be the one that stepped out to take and do the fight.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the other thing that's kind of unanswered is that little girl that was with the Oracle at the end. And,
right.
You know, when they're off and it's, you know, the beautiful rainbow sunset thing or whatever, or sunrise.
Right.
The Oracle says, little girl, did you do that? And she says, yeah.
Exactly.
She was a program without a purpose, right? First of all, programs making other programs and that, but she was a program without a purpose, so... What's her purpose now? Is she the new one?
I was getting ready to say that. The only thing I could think is that they were alluding to her being the next one.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, how did she exist with the current one, which was Neo?
But she, and on top of that, she's not quote unquote a real person. She's a program. So there's a lot. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions. I think they have enough range, enough space. They could certainly make a fourth movie if they wanted to.
Oh, they have an infinite range. I think they can make an entire series. And I think they could also spin off a lot of things.
Speaking of series, let's hope and pray that they don't make a television series out of it. That's the way to kill anything.
Yeah, you know, well, I tend to agree with you, but going with that whole immersion thing, they've done the web, they've done the anime, they've done music, they've done movies, they've done DVDs with all the extra stuff, hidden things here. You know, I'm sure books, you know, comics will be coming out, comic books. I don't know. Is TV part of that equation?
I don't think so. I don't think so, because you look at all the great movies that they've done that, and they've turned it into a TV series just to try to cash in on it, and I don't think it's really been effective. So hopefully they're not. I'd rather see them, you know, do more anime, just do, like, the first one in the Animatrix, you know, the CGI. The exquisite CGI anime, stuff like that, rather than doing a rather than doing anything else. You know, the one other thing that we didn't mention, we talked a little bit about the game, and there is going to be a online, massively multiple player online game of the Matrix.
Right.
And that's coming out. So that's probably the next step that they're doing, as you know, you'll be able to buy the program and spend your hard-earned money every month to be addicted, as I think as you called it before, like the Evercrack syndrome.
Right. Now, see, I'm not sure what to make of that. I think that could have been something... Obviously, 2 and 3 came out pretty close together. That could have been something between movies, where they... You could be a player in the Matrix world, and you could see things happen, and you could... As a player in the game, wonder and think about things, and what is that over there for, and what is the significance of this person, and, you know, every once in a while run into a Smith and watch him, and make you wonder what's going on, and then when the next movie comes out, you get answers to the questions that you came up with while you were playing the game. And that's the kind of immersion I have felt all along, was they keep leading me along with more questions, and I keep getting more answers, yet more questions, and then I get more answers, and more, you know, that's what it, I think that would have been something between movies. And like you said, maybe they do come out with a fourth or another trilogy or another series or whatever, which I don't know. I haven't heard anything. Have you? I don't want to give people some thought that there's going to be another one. I don't think so. I haven't heard anything to that effect of you.
Haven't heard a single thing about it, no. Not at all.
Yeah, so don't get your hopes up anytime soon. Especially the money that they've made on this must just be staggering.
There's I didn't get a chance to read it yet. I subscribed to Wired magazine, and you can probably get it online. But there is a there's an article about the Wachowski brothers that's coming up. So I've got to read that, and we'll see if there's maybe anything in there that you know, alludes to the next phase of the Matrix.
Hmm. Well, I guess time will tell. And you know what? Let's I think we're over, but there's a couple scenes I still want to talk about. It. I want to see what you thought about. What do you think about the whole mech army? Did you have a problem with the guys climbing into the big robotic mechs?
No, actually I thought that was kind
of
cool.
I did too. I thought that was incredible. And the best scene of the movie to me, my jaw dropped. And I said, I can't, because I'm not cursing, I'm not going to say it. But I said, oh, shoot. When I saw that thing drop through the ceiling and all of those little octopus things come through, that was the scene of the movie for me.
Yeah, it was interesting, the way they were swarming around, like the hive intelligence.
Exactly. It was so primal.
And the other thing that was interesting about that drill is that after it dropped and fell through, you know, so it could just be the juggernaut drop and break. Well, no, all these little legs came out so it could keep drilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was very interesting as well.
Them machines are smart.
Whatever his name was, that main general or whoever that was doing the thing, he was a real kick butt kind of a guy.
Yeah, you know what? And he was such a jerk in the previous parts of the movie, and he was a jerk in this movie, but I still liked him. I still liked the character.
You know, all the other mechs, and you got to see how many there were. I mean, there were hundreds of them, right?
Yeah.
Out of all the other mechs, he was the one left alive at the end. He was the last.
Oh, you're talking about that? You're talking about the big general. I thought you were talking about the guy who was underground organizing the defenses.
Yeah, no, not to Niobe's...
X or whatever he was.
Yeah, the kind of Asian guy.
Yeah.
Name was, but he was the kick butt kind of thing, and like right at the end, you know, gung-ho, yeah. Semper Fi kind of stuff.
Yeah, the great, it was just so cool because if you've ever, obviously none of us have ever been in a mech war against an alien race or against a race of robots. However,
speak for yourself.
If you've ever played a video game and you think strategy-wise, you know, there's a choke point, and you'll aim your fire at that and try to stop things. Well, in that movie, when that hole came through, they knew where they were coming. You knew what was about to happen. You heard them. And every mech in the entire thing was aimed and locked on. And that was it was just a magnificent scene. As fast as this hive of things was coming in, they were getting mowed down. But there was such an overwhelming number of them. And I think it did a good job of that. Feeling overwhelming. Feeling just like a hive taking possession. You know, coming in, and they have all of these mechs trained on it, and one or two trickled through, and one or two mechs would chase him off, and that's one less gun on the choke point. And they slowly got pulled away until you realized, that's it, you know, they're in. But yeah, that was the scene of the movie for me. The scene where... What do you think about the scene at the very end with Neo and Trinity going to the robot world?
I was gonna bring up one point from there too that actually kind of gets back to the idea of potential for the next movie. As Neo and Trinity are doing the thing and they're making it to, you know, going there, I thought it was awesome. Those mountains were actually like huge, you know.
Yeah, they came alive.
Bulldog kind of things, you know, shooting out the stuff. Again, even for suspension of disbelief, you know, Neo being able sticking out his hand and knocking those missiles or whatever those things were out of the way, that was a little bit of a stretch. But yeah. What I found interesting is that when they went up through the sky,
right? Go with it. I'm with you.
That was all going. So you know, potentially, I'm thinking that's another thing that could be played in the next movie because let's face it, right? The machines have harnessed the human beings for energy because they can't do solar energy anymore because, as we know from the Animatrix, the people of Earth, blackened out. However, whatever they did, whatever technology they used to screen the sunlight off from the Earth to hopefully knock off the machines. Well, if the machines would know that that's out there, they could apply their technology to doing that and getting solar energy again. So maybe they could live in peace. You know?
Well, and now see, here's where I got a little bit confused at that. They peeked up and got through the clouds or whatever, and Trinity saw the sun and saw the sunlight, said how beautiful it was before they dove back in. I must have misunderstood. In the Animatrix, I thought they actually like blew up the sun. I thought they didn't blacken it out. I thought they blew it up to get rid of the source of energy for the robots.
No, they. Well, think about it. If you blow up the sun,
Well, I know, and they, I think they, the whole point was they had given up. Like I said, obviously I misunderstood it. I thought they were saying, listen, we're going to take you out with us by taking away your source.
No, they didn't, the humans didn't want to kill themselves, and there was the one scene in the Animatrix where these flying, they kind of reminded me of a fish, but anyway, these big B-52 kind of bombers are flying through the sky, and you see these black clouds coming out behind them, and the sunlight being blocked off. So then they refer to it as burning off the sky or something. So I know they messed up the atmosphere, the ozone layer, or what have you. But no, they didn't. The humans weren't going to blow up themselves. You know, take out the robots and themselves. The humans still wanted to live.
Well, how is it that Neo was able to fly the ship? Neo and Trinity were able to fly the ship up where they could see the sun, but the robots couldn't. I mean, wouldn't they have followed them up that high?
Well,
B, have they never tried before?
They may have never tried, but think about it. When they went up through that, all the electrical activity, the storm, like thunder and lightning type of stuff, knocked out their engines. So that they kept going up on momentum, and that's when they dove back down. Is because they reached the apogee, and then they started descending again. That's when Trinity had to start the motors back up.
Right.
Probably with all that electrical activity, none of the robots, for lack of a better word, could go through that. They probably just never tried. It was too dangerous, and they never tried to do that.
Well, they have Neo now.
Yep.
If he's alive, they have him. I wonder if they can, assuming their technology and knowledge of the human physiology, they can read his mind and know that it's up there. Maybe we can infer or read ahead and make our own conclusion that they do understand now that the sky is up there and figure out how to break through and... They all live peacefully, happily ever after?
Well, the other thing is, though, that Neo, even though he was blinded, was able to see, you know, what was going on. He could see, you know, like the outlines, the energy patterns or whatever of all the machines. And when they went up through the clouds, they didn't show Neo recognizing that there was sky. Trinity saw it.
Right.
And felt, you know, that maybe they felt the warmth, whatever, but she saw it. But Neo didn't. So if the machines have Neo and they don't know, and Neo isn't aware of that fact, how are the machines going to find out? However, did Trinity really die? And could the machines bring her back?
Obviously, they could, but again, another open, you know, unanswered question. But again, I had closure. I was very happy with the movie. All in all, I give it, you know, thumbs up. Thumbs up from me.
You know what? And the little side note here, I saw the Reloaded on, you know, in a regular theater initially, and then a couple months later I saw it at IMAX, which is, by the way, is awesome at IMAX. Well, for Matrix 3, they had it available on IMAX at the same time, and every place else that had an IMAX, I'm guessing because I didn't go to all the other cities, but every place else that had the IMAX played Matrix 3 on opening day. In Phoenix, in their ultimate wisdom, they decided not to play Matrix 3 on the IMAX. They were still playing Matrix 2 for one showing. How dumb is that? I wanted to see it on the IMAX. I went to see it at a new theater. It's the largest theater in the state of Arizona, Cine Capri. So it was great. It was big. It wasn't as big as the IMAX, but talk about total immersion.
Right.
That's the place to see it the second time.
Yeah, you got to have that surround sound and the stadium and all that for these big movies.
Yeah, but I mean,
now,
you know,
see,
you
the
got
IMAX...
a very high screen...
Right. The IMAX, though, it wasn't filmed in the IMAX film and IMAX format. It was just stretched, and I didn't know if that would really add very much to it other than being really...
Actually, it works very well.
Really
it,
big.
It works very well. I saw I saw Matrix 2. I also saw Star Wars. This is the Star Wars Episode 2. I saw it on the original digital screen. I saw it again on an analog screen, and I saw it on IMAX. The only thing with the IMAX, some of the action that happens very close to the front of the screen, your eyes can't focus on it quick enough, and you can't pan it going through. But, the technology for porting over a regular film to the IMAX format works very well, I think.
Well, on that note, I think we just give credit to Neo being the ultimate hacker. Started off with a movie about a hacker falling asleep at his computer following the White Rabbit, and... We are a hacking radio show, and I think we're way over time, I'm pretty sure.
And one last thought on that, you know, is that the whole thing takes place in about 6 months from when Neo is woken up to the end. That's roughly about 6 months.
Yeah, you want a bad... Anybody who's complaining, if you wanted a bad ending, the bad ending would have been Neo wakes up in front of his computer and it was all a dream or a game or something like that. So, believe me, the movie could have been real bad. Keep that in mind.
Absolutely.
So, closing it up, I'm going to shout out 954-2600, my 2600 meeting, and Cy Pete, who's got that started and organized and been working on some things with him lately. And shout out to Decoder for doing the show. Next time we have Decoder on, we're definitely going to spend more time talking about Freaking. We really didn't last time. So did you have anybody you wanted to shout out to?
Yeah, shout out to the whole gang out here in Phoenix with the 2600 thing. And I don't know, but I guess my P2, my robot dog.
Oh, well, yeah. If he's listening, shouts out. And any email feedback, tell us how bad the Matrix sucked if you want. You can send the letters at binrev.com. And that is it. Same cliched ending for every show that Rax loves. We will see you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel. And for those people who remember it, as I always used to say on RFA, keep knowledge free.
Keep knowledge free. Oh, and damn it, I ruined it again. I got to mention our closing music is... Scheme Determined. Now, keep knowledge free. Peace out. All right, good episode. We are now off the air, and I gotta add the editing music onto this, and...
But you know what's cool? I think you made it all the way through that swearing.
I didn't swear a single time on this whole fucking show. Did you hear that?
It was fucking awesome.
I know, that was fucking sweet. Man. And nobody knows that we start cussing after we've stopped recording.
Yeah, well, good thing, you know.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Wait a minute.
Oh, shit.
Live in my stop me. Stop me. Yeah. Better believe that, man. I'm tired of playing games with y'all.
For real.
You gotta understand that. I'm determined to do what I do, man. And I ain't tripping off it. I'm just doing me. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
I know you feel me. Steady on, man. Do your thing. And just remember one thing throughout all that. Do yours. But you cannot stop me. Yeah.